Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you, Jaguars. Today, back in the States in full with Mike Dempsey, Jeff Wagman, Fat Tony. Tony, what's up? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine. I'm fantastic. How was Jaguars today on this side of the pond for the last week?
It's been nice.
I bet.
It would be better if we had a little bit
come back.
Sunnier things to talk about from a team perspective, and Sunday was about as bad as it's been really all year. Listening to the fan reaction to what happened in that game in London, a lot of disappointment, a lot of anger here over the last 24 hours or so.
We will get into all that, but before we talk about disappointment, anger, or any of those other emotions, thanks to all of us, to all of you. We're not the first, nor should we be the last to say it. Happy Veterans Day out there to those who've served honorably in the United States military armed forces in the past or presently serving, and I suppose those who will one day serve as well. But tough to know who those people are going to be.
Sure, it's pretty cool this year. My grandfather, who fought in the Pacific during World War II, we finally got his stuff put into a museum over there in New Orleans, the World War II Museum.
Wow.
So pretty cool to have that honor this year as well. But, yeah, obviously, thank you to all the veterans out there for what the service that they've given to our country and giving us the opportunity to come on here and talk football for 2 hours a day. It's pretty awesome.
Absolutely. By the way, coming up in less than, I guess, just an hour from now would be the exact anniversary of the armistice signing that ended hostilities with Germany in World War I. That's what this started with, Armistice Day, and we saw Remembrance Day in full effect on Sunday in London. Jeff Logman's here. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing good.
We made it back.
Yeah. It's kind of a long trip, man. I can honestly tell you when the wheels touched down, I was a happy man.
Oh, so was I. Kidding
yeah.
me?
Man, you know, hey, look, I've been, I've traveled. I don't want to say I've traveled the world, but I've traveled a lot of places. I really enjoy the United States. You know, I mean, there's so many places that I want to see in the United States and haven't been to London twice. Okay. After the first time, okay, been there, done that, I'm ready to be home.
Right. Among the things I enjoy, straight roads. Roads that continue in the same direction for more than a couple hundred yards.
You know, I was actually talking to one of the drivers that I had over there on my way to the NFL sponsor party on Shad's boat, Kismet. And I was asking him about that. I was like, you know, is there not a road system over here in the UK? And he said, look, he said, we actually have a road system. Because I was asking, you know, we have highways, you know, where you get on it and you're going
right.
60 miles an hour and there's no traffic lights. And he said that they have some of them. He said, but the traffic on them is so bad. He said that you absolutely go nowhere. And he said, it's not worth getting on them. He said, for the people that know the shortcuts, he said, and me and you were in a cab.
Oh, several.
And their version of a shortcut and our version of a shortcut are two totally different things.
You know, it's funny you bring this up. I was going to say this for later, but now's as good a time as any. There was a story yesterday on, I like going to Deadspin, and one of their related sites is something called Jalopnik, which is basically a site that all things having to do with automobiles, anything that drives on wheels, basically. And they've got this story from the New York Times that the New York Times is doing this deal about a test called the Knowledge. Have you ever heard of this test called the Knowledge?
No.
The Knowledge is...
Knowledge tests for me are probably not good.
The Knowledge is a one-question test given to London cabbies. This is perfect story. I've seen this yesterday. You have to be able to tell how to get from any one point to any other point that they ask you in the city of London without looking at a map, without using GPS, without asking any reference. You have to tell every turn, the name of every street that you're going to turn on.
I'm going to tell you right now, the cabbie that we had the first night that we went into London
would have failed the knowledge. We
were okay that night on the way in.
In. Oh, wait. On way
the
in
way
was fine.
Out.
Yes.
That guy had somebody else with a fake ID take his test because he had no clue.
You know, the thing of it is, too, he was driving one of the black cabs, which this is the test for that company, the iconic cabs that you see when you look at a London cab.
Did you get his permit number?
I did not.
You should have.
But he was using the GPS, and he still couldn't find his place.
He couldn't use the GPS.
You were directing him towards the end of the trip. You're like, he wanted to go left, and you said, no.
No,
it's right. And I'm like, we've been here for a day, two days.
How bad is that when an American in the UK is guiding a cab driver to tell him where to go?
I will tweet this link out to this, though. It's worth the 2 minutes to watch it. It's fascinating because what they did is they showed this guy taking his oral test. It's an oral test, obviously. And I say obviously, but they pick a point.
I like the term verbal test better.
Oh, okay, verbal test, fine. He goes from point A to point B, and every point that he's describing, every right turn, left turn, they're showing it visually from a driver's point of view. So he's describing, you got to turn left on this street, turn right on this street, boom, 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 boom. You go around this circle, da, 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 and boom. And he got it right. And a couple of times you go, oh, what's the name of that road? Okay, yes, it's this. And he goes, you know, we're going to take the off-ramp onto this and a slight, and, you know, because some of them, they're such circular roads, you're just veering onto one and you're off on another, and you can't even really tell that you're on a third road there, and you've got to make sure you name every single bit of that. And among the things on this test that they have to be able to answer to, they have to know all streets, every housing estate, park, open space, government office and department, financial and commercial center, diplomatic premise, town hall, registry office, hospital, place of worship, every single one, sports stadium, leisure center, airline offices, stations, hotels, clubs, every single club in London, theaters, cinemas, museums, art galleries, schools, every school in London, you must be able to identify and tell them how exactly how to get to, colleges and universities, police stations, headquarters buildings, civil, criminal, and coroner's courts, prisons, and any place of interest to tourists. And they said this one guy got asked to describe how to get to a statue that is a foot tall that depicts two mice sharing a piece of cheese. And it's on, like, the facade of some building. And that's how detailed
is that a statue? Does that qualify as a statue, or would that be a trophy?
I don't know. But I guess if it's a foot-tall mouse, it probably is a statue from the mouse's perspective. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. You're right. The guy who was driving us on Tuesday night, I think it was Tuesday night.
I think it was.
Needed some help. No question about it.
I knew he was going the wrong way. Here's the funny thing, Mike. I don't know if you noticed this, but when we left, he was trying to figure out the exact address. He kept asking us, what's the exact address? On his GPS unit, when he was trying to type in, you know, the location.
Right.
It was right there. It was, all he had to do was take his little stylus pen and click
punch it
on
right.
The Grove Hotel, and it would have popped right up on the GPS, and he kept ignoring the fact that it was right there, and I was sitting there going, oh my God, this is not going to be good. We hadn't even left yet. I said, I knew we were in trouble.
Yeah.
That's why, remember, I kept asking him, are you sure you know where you're going? Are you sure you know where you're
absolutely.
Going?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I kept asking him.
And, you know, I got it. We should have made sure he knew where he was going before our friends in the Jags London PR office had to bribe him to take all seven of us
yes.
in the cab. How many pounds got dropped in his lap on that? You were sitting up front. You had a bird's eye view of that.
I didn't see what the exact amount was in that handshake.
Right.
But I'm sure it was good because there was no question he was going to carry all of us after he got that handshake.
Yeah, immediately he was on the phone to dispatch. One just got out.
We're okay. We only got six now.
We're okay at this point in time. I actually had a cab driver on Friday night. I had some shows for Sirius across town on Friday night and got a guy who's from Afghanistan driving. So I actually spent, you know, a good 30 minutes talking to him about, you know, the view of the United States, for, you know, Afghanis. And he's like, look, it basically comes down to education. If you're educated, you know, you understand, you know, we need to be brought into more of the modern world, you know, mm-hmm. and that's the direction it's going. He said, the problem is only 30-40% of the populace is what he would consider educated, you know, so it was fascinating. It's a very cosmopolitan city, obviously.
Yeah. It's a huge melt, not just London. But the entire UK.
Right.
That's one thing that I've kind of come away with it because, you know, we spent time on the outskirts of London, really not even considered London. And it is definitely a melting pot of different people, ethnicities, races, et cetera, all throughout the UK, which was very surprising to me. I mean, I'm talking now, once you get into the city of London, I mean, from all walks of life,
yeah.
all nationalities, all countries, I mean, it's definitely a bustling metropolis. Me personally, having spent a lot of time in New York, I'll take New York any day of the week over London.
Why is that?
The food's better. They drive on the right side of the road. But it's London is kind of spread out, whereas New York is, and maybe I'm wrong in this, at least that's the impression that I got, and that New York is, I don't know, I kind of knew where I was wanting to go in New York and figured it out, I guess you could say.
It's those straight roads, Tony. It's like, it's, you know, 58th Street, you know, that's 50 streets away from 8th Street.
But the one thing that New York can't compete with is history.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's so much of it in London, you know, that goes back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years.
I was talking to somebody about, you know, St. Augustine and how old St. Augustine, I think St. Augustine's coming up, I want to say on its 450th or 450 or 425 it might be. 425, I'll say, anniversary of its founding as the oldest city in the United States, mm-hmm. oldest continuously occupied city in the United States of America. And they're like, yeah. Yeah. Is that all you got?
Yeah,
right.
You got.
Right. We got you doubled
the,
plus.
The cool thing also is that, you know, having grown up in Virginia, which, you know, Virginia, you have a lot of the colonial architecture. You know, the University of Virginia, you know, founded in 1819, has got a lot of that brick and mortar kind of stuff. And Williamsburg, Virginia, one of the first towns, has a certain flair and a certain look to it. When you go to London, I mean, there's the just the age of everything,
yeah.
and the architecture is fun to see, and it's a great experience to me. I mean, literally, when I'm in a cab or we're on a bus, you know, going wherever we're going,
sure.
I just found myself constantly looking at the surroundings and the architecture and just taking it all in. So, I mean, it was a pretty cool experience.
It was a great experience for me, never having been there. Not as good of an experience for the Jags on the football field, off the football field, I think. You know, success again. We'll talk about the game, obviously. You know, from the Jags' point of view, talk about, you know, the London aspect of the National Football League and their desire to grow that, where things stand from your eyes. And I've got a lot of thoughts on that as well. And, maybe a few more anecdotes from the road along the way. If you want to get in, and I know Tuesdays you usually do, Jeff Logman is on board. Mike Dempsey back in the States. Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks been holding things down in our absence. 641-1010 is the number to get on board. Again, happy Veterans Day to the real veterans that we're saluting today. Those, for the United States Armed Forces, from all years past as well as present day. But today we ask you about the Jaguars veterans. Which veteran player, we ask in the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight, which veteran player has served the Jaguars the best this year? It'll be interesting to see how you define veteran. Jeff and I were talking about that. Not a lot of guys to choose from here, right? I mean, compared to most rosters around the NFL, if you're going to say you have at least had to play a couple years in the league.
What are we going to put? What are we going to classify as a veteran?
Well, I think maybe we leave it open-ended.
Because, well, I will tell you, if you spent a lot of time in the National Football League, a veteran guy is typically looked at as a fourth-year player once he gets beyond three games, because that's typically when a lot of the eligibility for pension, et cetera, kicks in. So in the player's mind, which that's kind of the mindset that I still have when I look at the term veteran,
sure.
in the National Football League, it would be fourth year.
Well, we'll say it's been at least 3 years previously in the National Football League. Okay?
Okay. So
there you go.
So he has to be in his fourth year.
In his fourth year or more in the National Football League, which cuts down your options, but that's kind of what my intention was.
It cuts him down a lot with his team.
It cuts him down significantly. Is Denard a vet, people are asking right now? Not according to the definition today. So which veteran player has served with the most distinction for the Jags this year, and which one needs to pick up his game? You can tweet us at MD_1010XL. At logs56, logs56, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Lauren. Truly good to be back home in the United States of America. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is Spencer Davis. I want to say a very grateful thank you to all the veterans, military men and women who serve us all year round. Thank you so much for everything you do.
God bless the USA.
Happy Tuesday to you. Happy Veterans Day. CCR, proud Mary. I'm assuming something along the lines, proud to be an American, proud of all the veterans who served this country. Am I in the ballpark, Lauren Brooks?
Nailed it.
Hit Yay!
It. First time.
I'm one for one post-London. Hooray.
I had to be proud of the veterans today. My grandfather, 93, served in World War II. So.
Is he's still going strong?
And he's 93? The one who cooks us dinner every Wednesday night.
Awesome.
He's amazing.
That is fantastic.
That is impressive.
Tip of the cap, man. 93 years young. How about that? Loggy, we're just talking before we get to some of these phone calls that are stacking up for you here. Coming back yesterday, yeah, going through customs, I didn't think it was that bad. You know, we got back
and one battle.
A quicker process than the itinerary laid out indicated it might be. So, but I'm a little off on exactly what time it is. I get back in the car. We parked at a little satellite lot by the airport, and I'm like, all right, now that I'm behind the wheel of my car, I'm really back in America now. There's no one driving me around. Now I'm going to hit the road. And I'm thinking, all right, usually I get a haircut every Friday during football season. This is part of my routine. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go Monday morning.
Do you actually pay for that?
I do.
Oh.
Yeah, because I like
it. Can't do that yourself or have somebody do it for
you? I might. Have you ever seen my head? My head's got a lot of depressions in it, Tony. a lot of, like, weird shaped, like, moles and stuff all over my, I mean, I'm an imperfect person.
I'm not being critical of your haircut. What I'm saying is that when you basically go to the number one guard.
I go one guard and a zero on the side, but you gotta blend that thing, man. It can't be like a straight
you're
line.
You're fading a one to a two.
One to a zero.
Oh, come on.
And then the face, I gotta go with the one and a half on the face. It's just a slight bit longer. I like that. I like to get my hair cut. I like to sit there for 15 minutes and have somebody take care of me for 15 minutes. I imagine it's like what women like to go get their nails done. You know, I like to sit in the barber shop. And, see the same people I see every time I go in there, and it's all good. So I'm driving home, and I'm thinking, I wonder if they're open at 8:30. And I'm driving, cause I'm making good time. There's not a whole lot of traffic for whatever reason. And I pull into the barbershop, and I'm like, well, now it's more like 8:45. I should be fine. Well, it's 7:45, cause they hadn't reset the clock in the car, for daylight savings time. Tip of the cap to Price's Barbershop in St. Augustine, because they open early. So yeah, it was great. I was third in line by 7:45 in the morning at the barbershop. So and then I stopped by Publix, got that Boar's Head roast beef, loaded up on dandy sandwiches, and I'm all set. Now I'm back in the USSA USA.
I was fired up too, because I stopped at a place and got, you know, biscuit sandwich, and then stopped at another place in the afternoon and got a sub, and I was in heaven.
Yeah. You just got to get a little taste of the USA. Although they did a great job bringing over, we talked about it last week, they brought over as much of what the players would want, you know, in the way of seasonings and condiments. And, I mean, if you wanted to eat, quote-unquote, American, you could throughout the week. If you wanted to broaden your horizons, you could do that as well. They took fantastic care of us.
Yeah, it was good. There. The one thing that I think that is definitely different that you notice is the folks in the U.K. don't cook their eggs very, I mean, they like them very runny. They actually add a lot of cream to the eggs.
Yeah.
And so it's probably near impossible to get the eggs a little bit more firm.
Right.
Which I was kind of nervous at first trying them. But then I asked the chef, you know, why are these so soft, runny? And he explained to me how they actually cook their eggs over there and that they use a lot of cream in it. And once I figured that out, the fact that they weren't raw, then I was okay with it. And then,
were you?
Yeah, and it was actually very good. And the turkey meatballs, I'm digging the turkey meatballs.
Yeah, the turkey meatballs were good. They're bacon. Everything's a little different.
I didn't touch the bacon.
Right. It's not really our bacon.
No, but you know what? The team's meal where they were eating at the second location, which was the Hilton Wembley.
Yeah.
They actually had real bacon.
Ah.
Yeah. The players had real bacon at the Hilton Wembley.
As much bacon before you play a football game.
So I had to sneak a couple pieces of that.
Good for you. Let's quickly get some thoughts before we start getting these phone calls going. It's a game that the Jags started out very well, right? They come out and they give up a long field goal, but then they go down, score a touchdown, stop Dallas, and then just what a gut punch in terms of momentum and field position and everything. Ace Sanders muffs that punt, and nothing's really the same from that point on. It's not that one play loses a football game for you, but that certainly was a crippler, as was the Dez Bryant long touchdown at the end of the first half.
Yeah. Here's the whole thing that I have with the Ace Sanders muff on the punt. What did he look like after that? What was your impressions of Ace Sanders after he put the ball on the carpet?
He was on the ground, and then he...
No. I'm not talking about on that play. I'm talking about the rest of his returns in the game.
He got aggressive.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Why not that before?
Right. Well, I thought he got too aggressive, and he got away with it on the very next punt.
Well, he fielded the ball inside the five-yard line.
Right,
I mean, there's no question about that.
But he made a nice return out of it.
But here's my thing. Why do you have to have a sense of urgency after you put the ball on the carpet?
Right.
I mean, why aren't you having that sense of urgency before that? You know, so to me first of all, you can't turn the ball over on special teams, and Ace Sanders violated the number one rule. You do not run until you've secured the ball, which he was starting to move because there was a guy that was fairly close but wasn't going to threaten him as far as contact of catching the ball, and he tried to leave before that. So he violated the cardinal rule you never do. Okay, then he puts it on a carpet. Cowboys recover. Fine. Okay, that happens. Okay, if you're punt return, occasionally that happens. The problem that I had was not with turning the ball over, was, okay, if why do you have to, why are all of a sudden are you more serious, more electrifying,
yeah,
more focused after you've had something bad happen to you? Why not before?
Right.
Okay. And so almost with the team in general, you're okay, why aren't we having a sense of urgency right out of the gate?
Well, we kind of talked about that before this season. You don't want to run 2 minute all the time, but it seems like at the end of the half, when you get in that urgent mode, is when the offense has been at its best this year.
Well, the biggest issue that I had is, that you had mentioned that they came out and they started well. I don't think they started well. I don't think they started well at all. I mean, because DeMarco Murray came out and first play of the game,
he
rips off like a 20-something yarder. And they got one key third down stop to force the Cowboys to get a field goal on that. But, you're talking about a Cowboys offense that's still trying to figure out, is their quarterback going to be healthy enough to throw the ball down the field? And so they were playing very conservative in that early part of that ball game. So I don't think they came out of the gate and played well. But if you don't turn the ball over, what would have things have been like? If you don't give up a long touchdown to Dez Bryant with 31 seconds left to go, and you're not playing, and I made a mistake last night, and I didn't mean to, but I said press man with Dwayne Grotz covering Dez Bryant, and it wasn't press man, it was press coverage, but a zone. But Grotz is essentially playing it like press man because he has to carry the route deep. So, matter of semantics, but it doesn't matter. Why are you playing press on Dez Bryant with no safety over
right.
the top with 31 seconds left to go?
And apparently Jason Garrett said something to that point at halftime.
Can't
we couldn't see it, obviously.
Can't
he said, look, we were almost like we were shocked to see that. And if you're going to do that, we'll throw it to him on every single play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely. And that to me, that was disappointing. The turnovers continue to disappoint, but that was a huge coaching mistake there before the half because that made the score, I believe, 24-7 going in at half. You could have gone into the half, okay? Even though things didn't go great in the first half, you could have gone into the halftime with the ball coming out, with the score at 17-7 with an opportunity to cut it to a one possession
game. Down 10, having basically given them 7.
Yes.
Right? I mean, so you feel like you're in the game,
yeah,
and it's a completely different feel to it when you go into the locker room. I agree with you in that circumstance.
Yeah, and the muff punt was awful. I mean, it was awful. And it's the second turnover, too, when, look, the team felt a little dead for most of that, the rest of that first half. They get the ball back with 4 minutes left. They hit the play to Cecil where he makes
right.
a good play.
He really
snatches that ball
play.
Out of the air. He makes two guys miss. He gets down the sideline. You're like, all right, for the first time since that first drive, momentum a little bit on that Jaguar sideline. And Denard, who hadn't done it all year, puts the ball on the ground. They lose possession from there. And for the rest of the half and the game, really, nothing. I mean, it was dead from a Jaguars perspective for the remainder of that game.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, the Cowboys, I think, put it into kind of cruise control. They got a touchdown in the third quarter and didn't feel threatened, really, the rest of the way. Jags put some points up in the fourth quarter, but nothing that was going to challenge Dallas.
The Jaguars offense just has to develop and continue to develop and develop at a faster pace than what we're seeing. And I think one aspect that needs to be looked at is what's our spacing in our passing game? You see a lot of the quick slants, the out routes, a lot of stuff in that, from the line of scrimmage out to about 10 yards. And you've got some receivers that have the ability to, and I don't want to say stretch the field consistently, but stretch the field a little bit more. Cecil Shorts has done it in the past. We've seen it. We know that Marquise Lee has unbelievable speed. I showed it last night on Jaguars All Access. I mean, he looked like Forrest Gump running through Bear Bryant's practice. I mean, that's how good he looked. Can we find a couple plays, that Marquise Lee can run, in a game to where he's trying to stretch the field? I think that is something that they definitely have to take a look at during the bye week. It's something that Jed Fish has to consider because you need more explosive plays out of the offense because we've seen them have a lot of drives that's getting 6-7 play drives, punt, 4-5 plays, 6 plays, whatever it may be. They're putting drives together, but where's the explosive element?
Right.
The Cecil Shorts play was 53 yards, and we're like going crazy.
Right.
Because it's like, wow.
Well, the Denard Robinson touchdown run.
It was 32 yards.
Right.
I mean, that's an explosive play. But in the passing game, where's the big chunks in the passing game?
And where they're coming from. We talked about this a little. I'm sure you did as well in the halftime and the post game in the brief time I was on. They're all coming from run after catch
I think one
type
of,
situation.
Yes, they are. Most of them are as far as the explosive plays.
Yeah.
One aspect, though, that I wonder, if it's affecting the mindset of the play caller. The one area along the offensive line, and we've talked about how they've gotten better, which they have. I mean, they're running the football better. The protection has gotten better with play action. The one area, though, that it still needs to get better at is pure drop back, obvious passing situations. Blake Bortles under too much pressure in a straight drop back situation. That has to get better.
All right, let's go to the phones for the first time today since we're back on this side of the pond. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony. Ben, you're up next, or first, I should say, on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Good.
I was calling about the first question that you guys asked about which veteran was playing the best. It's in Derek Morris. I just think it is no other player that's playing better than him. And I just pray that they're going to let him go to the Pro Bowl because he deserves it. Like, ever since he came from Tennessee to Jacksonville, he played better than anybody on the team. I think the most disappointing on this is Clemens. And I look at it like, we've been wanting a pass rusher so bad. We know that he over 30, he had the knee. But it's just when we first signed it, we was just like, yes, we finally got somebody. Just somebody that can go get him. I just felt like he ain't did it. That we expected. We ain't expect him to be J.J. Watt, Pierre, but we just expect. I expected more. Maybe I was looking forward to more.
No, all I think you make a couple good points. First of all, about Senderic Marks, Ben, I think you're spot on. I mean, Senderic Marks is a tremendous player. In fact, will be the focus of Film Room Friday, Jaguars.com, with a couple of plays. He's got great anticipation. He's got great awareness. And he's got an uncanny athleticism that you just don't see very often. And he got his fifth sack against the Dallas Cowboys, which is a new career high for him.
A lot for a defensive tackle.
And that's a lot. Yeah, if you're a defensive tackle and you're getting into the 7 and the 8 range every year, you're an elite player at that position. Now, Senderic is not J.J. Watt. Let's not get those kind of players confused, but he is definitely playing at a high level. Now, Chris Clement, I don't really agree with you. I think that Chris Clement is exactly what you thought he was going to be, a player that is on the downside of his career that still can give you in those somewhere right around 8 sacks a year, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's no disappointment in that. As far as I'm concerned. And look, I'm probably one of the most critical judges of defensive ends that there ever will be. Because having played the position, I expect a lot out of it. Not that I was ever a guy that gave a lot. Now, my disappointing player, to me, is Toby Gerhart or Dakota Watson. You're talking about two guys that you got in free agency. Toby Gerhart, some of it's injury-related. I think with Dakota Watson, some of it's injury-related. But still, ignoring that, those are two guys that you expected to play key roles with this football team who you signed in free agency. And I'm not saying that you expect, you didn't go out and pay them $7 million and expect them to be high-level players, but you expected more than what you've gotten.
Yeah, no, I would agree with both those. And I think I also agree, though, or I feel that there's the public perception of Clemens is more on Ben's side than yours. I understand the point you're making. I just think, as he even said, maybe his expectations were too high for what he thought.
Yeah, I never thought he was a double digit sack guy. I always thought he would be a 8 sack a year guy, and he's got 4 sacks. Okay,
kind of on that pace.
Yeah, he's right around that range.
Right. All right. Let's get one more in before we break, and that would be Tom next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Tom.
Hello, Jeff.
Yes.
You mentioned a little something about food. Well, when I was in the military and we traveled around the world, and I was in Spain and Italy, and when we got back ashore, two buddies and myself went to a restaurant in Providence and sat down and had a steak and salad and a cold beer, and we looked at each other and said, America, it sure is great.
You're dead old, Tom.
Brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah, it was, the cool thing I think that I can honestly, say that I thought was really cool. Friday night, they had a sponsors NFL, or not NFL, that was the Jaguar sponsored dinner at Kensington Palace.
Mm-hmm.
And we walk in the door and there's all these people and they're holding out trays. Okay, you can have white wine, you can have champagne, and then some kind of drink that maybe was a mint julep, whatever that is, I don't know. And so I'm looking, I don't drink white wine, I don't drink champagne, I don't drink mint juleps. I like whiskey. Okay, I like whiskey. I like beer. Okay, so I asked the guy, one of the guys that was there, I said, do you have any scotch? He said, no. And I said, okay, do you have any red wine? And he said, we do, but weren't serving that at dinner. I said, well, can I get a glass? And he said, well, we're not allowed to serve red wine in here because Kensington Palace, they don't want to stain the floor.
Okay.
So I said, okay, so what are my options? You don't have scotch. You don't have red wine that I can drink in this room. What can I have? I said, do you have beer? And he said, I believe we do. He said, I'll be right back. He comes back and he says, sir, in that accent, sir, we have Budweiser. I said, bring me a whole platter of them.
Will that be acceptable?
Yeah, right. So they brought out a bunch of Budweisers, and we were all drinking Budweisers at Kensington Palace. It was
nice.
Cool.
Happy Veterans Day, Tom, and to all of you out there as well. 641-1010 if you want to get on board. Phone lines continue to be open for you. It is Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jessica Blaylock from the Frank Frangie Show with Rick Ballew. I just want to wish you a happy Veterans Day. Thank you so much to all of you men and women out there who have served our country. Words can't describe what it means.
God bless the USA.
Big glad you're along with us, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, and of course, the lovely Warren Brooks, George Thurgood and the Destroyers, American Made. Happy Veterans Day to all of you vets out there and currently serving members of the United States military, armed forces, reserves, whatever capacity you're out there. And we love all of you. Appreciate the job you do that we can sit here and talk about stuff like football and call that a living.
Yeah, and
it's a great country.
It was really cool too, getting to experience Remembrance Day over there in London. That was a pretty special deal, because you know when you see all of the little, and I guess you could say they're poppy flowers.
Yes, poppies,
and they have them on the lapel. And I've never seen a moment of silence in a stadium that was that packed. And when they have a moment of silence, it is minutes.
It was a minute of silence. They did a full minute of silence.
And they had the time of silence in the hotel on Sunday, I think it was, before we even left the hotel.
Right, right.
At some point, I guess they had a national moment of silence, and it was for 2 minutes. And then they had a moment of silence, which was a long period of time. You could have heard a pin drop in that stadium, period. It was unbelievable.
And everyone that I could tell that was a citizen of the UK was singing God Save the Queen.
No, was that not
They were all singing God Save the Queen.
I mean, right? I was getting teary-eyed sitting there listening to that, and not so much listening to it, but feeling the love that they have for their country on such an important day. I mean, you could just feel it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not very often you feel that.
I don't know what it's like, because it's the only experience I have to draw from. I don't know what it would be like on a non-military themed day,
well,
you know?
I can tell you, the only thing that I remember coming close to that feeling in that stadium was the national anthems at the NFL games post 9/11.
Oh, absolutely.
That's about equal.
Right, because that's why I was wondering, is this the same at every one of these London games? Are they that into it and showing their patriotism? I mean, that was pretty impressive.
It wasn't like that last year.
It wasn't, okay.
But Remembrance
Day. And that's why I was wondering,
absolutely,
because of the occasion. Yeah. And they were really very heartfelt.
I did a halftime interview with Sky Sports with Neil
Reynolds.
Reynolds.
Yeah.
Great guy.
He is a great guy.
Huge Jaguars fan.
He is pretty much, to me, the NFL guy over there.
He's also not only the NFL guy for Sky Sports, and I'm trying to remember the safety that was with him for Sky Sports over there. He was a former, obviously, NFL football player. And I'll think of his name in a minute. But, I mean, he's not only the face of the NFL for Sky Sports, but he's also the face of the Jaguars because he's done so much for the Jaguars over there.
Right.
I mean, he is a Jaguars fan. He's going to tell you that.
Right.
And went over there and did a halftime interview with them on the field. And when I walked over there, I didn't have a poppy lapel pin. And they immediately put one in my lapel of my short coat, and I wasn't trying to offend anybody by not having one.
Right.
But he immediately said, you know, let's put one on your jacket. I said, absolutely. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah. It was interesting for me, again, having experienced it for the first time. I didn't do like the traditional sightseeing stuff, just the way the schedule fell, you know. Monday, we didn't get there really early enough to, because you got to see it in the daylight. You're not going to go down and see Big Ben at night, as you know, typically, right, if you're going to tour around doing shows at 3 o'clock with practice falling at 1, and the distance it was to get there in one, it wasn't really like I was going to get up at 8 o'clock on a weekday and go down there because it would have been a waste of time. You know, you would have been 90 minutes, turn around, come right back kind of thing. So, you know, Friday, we're changing hotels. There's no opportunity to do that. I'm working all night. So Saturday, I wanted to go to the fan rally and experience that because I heard about how great it was in Trafalgar Square. Apparently, much different kind of atmosphere last year. You went to it. I saw you up there on stage.
Yeah, but Trafalgar Square is right in the heart of London, not far from Buckingham Palace and everything else.
Right.
Right in the heart of downtown London. And you have a huge number of people that are just passerbys that I think that's the venue that you need to have in the future because you're trying to create interest in a game, obviously, that we all love and is near and dear to our hearts.
And Wembley's not right there in London.
No,
so you gotta, it's a destination you've gotta be going to.
How long was the train ride from Wembley to downtown London?
20 minutes.
Okay, so 20 minute train ride. And a lot of people, and I was reading this statistic, and was talking to Neil about it, that for that game, for the NFL's International Series games, ballpark, if they surveyed the actual number of people that were from London attending the game, I think it falls somewhere in the 15-20% range.
Right.
I mean, this is truly an international series game where they draw from everywhere.
It was like a Super Bowl. To me, that's the only thing I could compare it to. I've been to a bunch of Super Bowls, and you at the Super Bowl, you see jerseys of every team represented. Obviously, predominantly the ones that are playing in the game if they're able to procure tickets, but you see a wide representation of it. It's more of a, you know, it wasn't as full-blown, but when you got Jeff Beck playing in the pregame and things like that, you know, there's
that was really cool, by the way.
It was very cool. And
he can still jam.
Who was the I didn't know her name beforehand. She could really sing, too. Is that her name?
Joss Stone,
okay,
yeah.
I apologies to Joss Stone. I did not know of her prior to that. I heard her singing that song in warm-ups probably a half dozen times. Mm-hmm. Very good. Very talented.
She was very good, but the headline, the by far the best performance in the game in that Super Bowl type atmosphere. The national anthem was good, but the lady, the soprano that sang "God Save the Queen."
Oh, she belted it out.
She knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, she really did.
Yeah,
she was pretty spectacular. But you know, the whole thing when you talk about drawn from outside of just that area, you know, because is it sustainable to have a franchise where ultimately they're not coming from all over Europe 8 times a year, you know, or 10 times a year, whatever the case may be? Can you draw enough right from there and convert enough of those fans? Certainly you get some spillover fans are going to be fans of the Packers or whatever that just show up because it's NFL football, but
could you draw 8 games a year? There's no question in my mind. But here's the issue. The issue is more of a logistics question than it is anything else with having a team over there in London.
The logistics for the team itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. No, yeah, there's no question about it. I mean,
here's the reason why the NFL wants to be over there. It's about the money. I mean, because London is an easy place for anybody in Europe to get to. It has a huge number of people, and the sponsorship potential in the UK is unbelievable. It's just like why you have so many NFL teams and pro sports teams in New York. It's no different than that. It's why they talked about having 2 teams eventually maybe in L.A. because of the market size and the sponsorship potential. London is the international financial headquarters of the world. Why would you not want to be able, if you're NFL owners, to somehow eventually tap into that market and to get that pipeline of money flowing back to their pockets? You know, so I get it. I understand why, but logistically, it would be very difficult.
Well, the most commonly reference the idea that I've heard is you'd play 2 home, 2 away, 2 home, 2 away. You do it like in little pods, right? So you're not coming back, forth, which would make some kind of sense because you're typically not on the road 3 consecutive, not a home 3 consecutive. But Jeff, this 1 week going over there and now the Jags have the bye week, right? And the Cowboys have a week off. Well, you wouldn't have that. You'd be 2 weeks, hey, let's pick up, go to the States, move this whole operation to the States. Who knows? Maybe you're playing out in California. It's going to happen, right?
Sure.
Eventually, right? So then now you're traveling all the way back into London and you're playing again on Sunday. I mean, it doesn't seem tenable to me to base a franchise there for that. There are a lot of other things that go into it, like the economics of it, how you'd pay players, the tax structure, people being willing or not willing to move their families to Europe, you know, for the vast majority of the year. Would you hold the off season over there? What are you going to do with players who don't have passports? On and on and on. But just the travel aspect of it alone, having done it now just once, and I'm not a world-class athlete, certainly, but just seeing what they're going through, I can't imagine there's ever going to be a franchise.
It'd be very difficult. Dave Caldwell, I think, had part of his interview. He talked about some of the challenges, and he's right that the NFL needs to require any potential prospect of the NFL when they go through the combine, when they go through the rookie symposium, to go through the passport process so that it makes it easier for teams, just like the Jaguars going over, or the Cowboys going over, that if you need a player in a pinch, because, you know, when we were at that game in Cincinnati and all of a sudden the injuries started to pile up,
right,
your first thing in your mind is, how are they going to replace that guy?
Right.
You know, when you're getting ready to jump on a plane and go to London.
Yeah.
So it's not easy.
Absolutely. 641-1010. James, I believe, is up next here on 1010XL on Jaguars Today. Good morning, James.
How you doing, man?
Good. What's up?
Hey, man, I'm a long-time listener, long-time Jaguar fan. Mike, I need to ask you a question.
Lost his signal.
I didn't do it to him. Everyone's like, Dempsey doesn't want to answer a question. Tony, you got a question for
Dramatic
me?
Dramatic pause.
Anything you've got for me that you'd like to ask?
No, I'm good.
All right. I was waiting. Then he disappeared. James, call back if you wanted. That sounded like a yeah, but kind of situation
right.
coming up. But that's all right. We'll take that. I think who do we have next? Jim, next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Hey, guys. Two questions. I'll take the answers off air. One is on Blake. I don't know. I'm starting to wonder whether we've got an issue there because it's starting to look a little bit. I haven't seen the coach's tape yet because it isn't up on the game rewind yet. But I wanted to ask you, it looks like to me that he's getting a little anxious in the pocket and the phantom pressure issue thing. And because it looked like a few times he had more time to stand in the pocket and, you know, do something than rushing his throws. That's the first thing. Second thing is that why does it seem that our receivers do not get separation? I was listening to Chris Carter the other day talk about Dez Bryant, and it's one thing is I'm giving our receivers a little bit more time anyway because he was just saying Dez Bryant in his fifth year is just now getting to the point where he can run the complete route tree. So I'm sitting here going, a guy as good as Dez Bryant just now after the fifth year is able to do that. You know, I got to cut our receivers a little slack, but I just don't understand why they don't seem to be getting any separation. I appreciate it, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you, man.
You talk about Dez Bryant in his fifth year starting to become a guy that's a complete player. You could also go back and draw the comparisons to Reggie Wayne. When Reggie Wayne was a first-round pick coming out of University of Miami, many in the Indianapolis organization viewed him as a potential bust because in his first couple of years he hadn't done a whole lot. You know, it takes time for some guys to develop. Some guys step into the league right away and can just make an instant impact for whatever reason. Some guys, it takes time. I'm very pleased with the young wide receiver group that the Jaguars have. You have so many young components. I mean, it's a young offensive line. It's a young quarterback. It's a young wide receiver group. So, you know, by Jim saying, you know, I'm willing to give them a pass, I mean, that might be an understatement, the understatement of the day. I mean, when
right.
you have...
They're rookies,
I mean,
for the most part.
Everybody. So, I mean, it is hard to have patience, and it's hard for me to have patience, and I totally understand why the fans want to see improvement more so with the outcomes of games with that offense, but it is what it is.
And now, this date in football history.
Oh, how I have missed bringing you this date in football history. Tony did a great job in my absence, of course. Presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on this date, November 11th, 1984. The Houston Oilers ended their streak of 23 consecutive road losses when they beat the Kansas City Chiefs 17-16. And also in that same date on a different year, 1990, Derek Thomas of the Chiefs set an NFL record with 7 sacks in a game against the Seahawks. They lost that game 17-16.
Yes, they did.
When Dave Craig pulled them out. No, he didn't. He did, right,
he
Dave Craig. He missed getting Dave Craig at the end. It could have clinched a game. Mm-hmm. So both of those games involved Kansas City falling 17-16 in those regards. Derek Thomas, 7 sacks in the game. I don't think that's been duplicated since, has it?
No,
not that I can recall.
I don't think so.
Will Aaron Rodgers go out and throw 6 touchdowns this week to tie Ben Roethlisberger's week-old NFL record of 12 in consecutive games?
Now, here's a question for you. Who was the left tackle in the game that Derek Thomas had those 7 sacks?
1990? for Seattle? I mean, was it Walter Jones then?
Nope.
I was hoping not. He wasn't there yet.
He was a first-round draft pick. Actually spent some time here on the Jaguars coaching staff.
Who you got?
Andy Heck.
Ah, how about that?
Yeah, which a lot of those sacks didn't come over him, but he has to live with that.
Good for him. What the heck? All right, there you go. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry right there on Gate Parkway. If you need the stop snoring mouth guard. I was pleasantly surprised. Maybe it was those massive headphones they give you on Virgin Atlantic. Didn't notice a whole lot of snoring going on the flight. Probably was the headphones, I'm guessing, in retrospect.
Well, in my case, it was the medication.
Could have been that.
Yeah.
We're not talking about Glenn Fittich either. We're talking about actual medication.
Well, there was two kinds on the way over and only one on the way back.
620-9225 for Dr. McCall, or check out jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The NFL started a review of Adrian Peterson's case last Thursday, saying that AP would remain on paid leave until the review of that case under the personal conduct policy was completed. That timeline apparently does not work for the Players Association, as they have filed an expedited grievance to get Peterson reinstated as soon as possible, citing explicit language in a signed agreement, supposedly, between Peterson and the league. Peterson pleaded no contest last Tuesday to a charge of misdemeanor reckless assault. New York Jets head coach Rex Ryan is upset with a Steelers safety leaping over the top of the line of scrimmage as the Jets were kneeling on the ball to wrap up their 20-13 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. For once, it was not Troy Polamalu, but instead it was Mike Mitchell. Rex Ryan, after the game, had this to say, quote, "I thought that was kind of Bush League in that part of the game when we're just kneeling on it. I was surprised by it, to say the least, and disappointed." I know how you feel about that play, Jeff.
Yes, you do.
Well, that and it,
apparently it's an epidemic in
Pittsburgh. Yeah, on the kneel down, it's even a little. He's done it. Polamalu's done it on the kneel down earlier this season. I think it was on the spike play, right? The spike to stop the clock play,
yeah.
Which I think is a little bit different because we've seen those fake spike plays. You don't see that fake kneel down play. It doesn't exist. There's no reason for a fake kneel down play. And I guess, you're trying to force an unlikely turnover in that scenario.
Kind of goes to the whole debate when Greg Schiano was the head coach at Tampa Bay with the kneel down and having defensive linemen knifing into the knees,
yes,
of the offensive linemen.
Yes.
Which I don't agree with. Yeah. I mean, I know that football is a very tough sport, but there also has to be somewhat of a gentleman's side to that game. And having that happen, Rex Ryan, I think, is spot on.
And Polamalu, I don't believe Polamalu played in the game. So Mitchell,
yeah, he was out.
I think, holding up his Polamalu's end of the the safety core back there for them. It was interesting. I was lost, man. The first thing I did, by the way, when I got back, I'd like to say I called my wife immediately. Actually, I turned on my NFL mobile on my cell phone.
Just
got
to signal,
see the scores. Then I called my beautiful bride, said, "Hey, honey, how you doing?
Got to take care of business, Mike."
Yeah, well, you know, that is business, right? That's what pays the bills in one form or fashion or another. 641-1010, you want to get in, talk a little Jaguar football. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony with you on Jaguars Today. Terrence, you're up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Mike. Yeah. Hey, guys. I wanted to make a point, but I'm going to have to do that on another day. But I want to get you all football knowledge on okay, looking at the defense from this last game, I want to know if Jeff and you all can explain gap control, or if the, I know the defensive linemen have a gap they're supposed to go into on each play, but do the linebackers are assigned a gap? And number two, on that Dez Bryant touchdown, why wouldn't single high work on that play, and they had one safety down some on that play, and someone was saying that, you know, you couldn't, that wouldn't work, or you had to rush the, if you want to put pressure on the quarterback, you couldn't have single high.
Why do you want to put pressure on the QB with 31 seconds left?
31 seconds left in game clock. Were they at 32-yard line?
Right.
You know, so 68 yards to go, you know, you want to make them use all the clock, you know, so you play a little bit of conservative defense. You always have somebody over the top so that you don't allow a deep ball. Now, Dwayne Grotz in that situation, I don't think there's anything wrong with playing a three deep look, but you have to have an awareness if you're one of those deep guys. that, hey, look, we're trying to not allow anything over the top. And I don't know if Gratz didn't get the proper call or if the call itself was off, but you can't be in that technique of press when you're in that scenario. It's very simple. It's much like when you faced A.J. Green and you heard Gus Bradley talking all week long about A.J. Green and if he plays. He said, we always have to have somebody over the top of A.J. Green. We have to have the awareness that he is a great deep threat. Well, Dez Bryant is still a deep threat, too.
Sure.
You know, so you have to have that awareness. So I don't know who to blame but the team, because I don't know if it was a call or if it was just an error in technique.
An execution breakdown, right. Right. What about, believe me, I'm not going to, while you're sitting in the room, try to explain gap control, when I can just look across the table and get a better definition of it. I think I understand what the concepts of what Terrence is asking about, but from a linebacker's perspective, we often talk about gaps for the defensive lineman, but I think very, a lot of similarities, whether it's gaps or areas and keys that you're responsible for defensively. And sometimes, from my impression, guy is trying to make up for somebody else who maybe gets out of his spot, tries to do a little too much on a play, and that causes the, kind of that cascade effect of where you open up some holes for some big plays.
Before we get into what the actual definition of gap control defense is, which is what the Jaguars, that's how they play defense. That's how most teams play defense in the National Football League. It's very rare that they actually teams play an old style 3-4 where you're zeroed up. In other words, head up on a guy and you have to play on both sides of him. So, the linebacker position has been constantly in flux since the Paul Posluszny injury. Okay, you had JT that moved to the Mike position, and then you had, I believe it was Dakota Watson playing the auto, and then all of a sudden that didn't work, so you moved JT back to auto, and Jeremiah George was inserted at the Mike position. Jeremiah George hurts an ankle. Well, then they go back to that combination of JT at the Mike and Dakota at the auto position. And I think that all of that movement, I think, impacted the team in this game against the Cowboys because JT got out of position a couple times. Dakota Watson did not have a great game. And a gap control defense is that somebody is responsible for a gap on every play. Now, you can play above. So, in other words, if the ball runs between the guard and the tackle gap, there is somebody that's supposed to be there to make that play if it goes in that gap. But you also have to have guys at what I call playing above the X's and O's. So, in other words, if you're an A-gap defender, center and guard gap player, are you not allowed to make the play in the B-gap? No. You're allowed to make the play, but you have to take care of your A-gap first and then being able to make a play in the B-gap. And on a lot of plays, people were out of their gap, and then the rest of them didn't play above the X's and O's because they're good up front for the Dallas Cowboys. And I showed a play last night on Jaguars All Access to where JT Thomas took on the block of the center, Travis Frederick. He's supposed to have his left arm and shoulder free to make a play in that gap. And he took him more head-on, gave a clear path for the running back, Joseph Randall. And you can see that Roy Miller, who was in the next gap over, tries to make it but can't quite get there. If JT had been a little bit better and sound in his technique, Roy Miller would have been able to make the play. You know, so you have to be very disciplined in that defense. And there were instances where they weren't. Whether it been the linebackers, whether it been the safety, whether it been the corner in some instances with Demetrius McCray, who was inserted in, you got to be better than that.
All right, Foundation Professionals of Florida giving you a chance to score a pair of tickets to an upcoming Jaguar home game. Running out of those opportunities, by the way. If you go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today, post a photo in the Florida Foundation Professionals of Florida photo contest thread there, and the theme is simply Jaguars passion, whatever that means to you. If you've got issues with your home's foundation, we certainly hope you don't, but the people to call are the Foundation Professionals of Florida at 287-2690. Visit foundationprosfl.com. 641-1010, our number here. More of your calls forthcoming. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Lauren Brooks with your J-Tech drive of the game. The Jags held the Cowboys to a field goal on their first drive, and then the offense got to work from their own 20 with 12:09 left in the first quarter. An 8-yard pass from Blake Bortles to Allen Robinson would set up this 32-yard touchdown by Denard Robinson.
Shotgun now for Blake Bortles. He'll give it to Robinson running to the right. There's a little bit of room to Denard. Denard's into the secondary to the 15-yard line, to the 10. He's racing for the corner. Touchdown, Jaguars! Denard Robinson from 33 yards. How do you like that?
The Jags' 7-3 lead was short-lived, though, as Dallas would then score 28 unanswered on 4 touchdowns. The Jags' defense did come up with a safety in the fourth quarter, and Denard Robinson punched in a 1-yard touchdown with a few minutes remaining, leading to a final score of Cowboys 31, Jaguars 17 from London.
The Drive of the Game has been brought to you by JTEC, a new automotive diesel and truck driving school here in Jacksonville. JTEC is driving the next generation of under-the-hood and over-the-road technicians and transportation professionals.
1010XL, 92.5 FM.
My heroes aren't athletes. They're the men and women of our armed services who served and continue to serve as guardians of our most precious thing, freedom. This is David Lamb, the guru, and I hope you'll join me on this Veterans Day by saying a special thanks.
God bless the USA.
Hey, I appreciate all those fans of the Jags. There are some hardcore fans of the Jags over there. There's no question about that. What their total number is, I don't know, but the ones who love them are as knowledgeable and passionate as any, including some of our favorite guys, Christoph and Irish Jag Stevie, who tweet and call the program regularly. Got to meet and hang out with those guys
yeah.
a little bit this week. Met Jaguar fans from Austria, from Belgium, from Germany, from pretty much all across the European continent. It's a debate with some of the bus drivers, by the way, whether the UK is part of Europe, Jeff.
They say it is not.
They say it is not. That's yeah. correct. It's the continent of Europe, okay? I get it. Whether you're part of the European Union, that's your business. I don't care. But they were all fantastic. Really, really cool. But as the song there, John Mellencamp, Our Country, good to be back home on Terra Firma. And the way I described it last week, for 1 week of the year, and really if they want to look at it the entire year, London can share the team with Jacksonville, is the Jacksonville Jaguars at the end of the day, you know, and it's not the London Jaguars. I don't think it'll ever be the London Jaguars.
I don't believe it will be either, and I know there are some that believe that it will happen. I don't see it happening at all.
Right. I don't either. Likewise, Shad Khan talking about this weekend that he'd like to extend the current arrangement. Why wouldn't he? Right? Makes financial sense.
Financial sense, but also business sense. You know, I think that he is really is one of the biggest proponents of this city and allies that we have. You know, he's trying to encourage growth and development in Jacksonville through
the International League. There are a lot of those business leaders on that plane with us.
And those kind of things are never bad for a city. I mean, for a city that's, and also, you know, with Shad Khan, he obviously wants to develop the downtown shipyards.
Right.
And I think that he's got a vision for that, and his group has a vision for that. The more, I think, prominence that we can bring to a vibrant downtown and that's and its development, I think the better it is. You know, because, I mean, look, we have the opportunity to see all of these other NFL cities. You know, even Indianapolis, which is, you know, for the most part was a farming town,
right,
has a vibrant downtown, much more so than Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And why can't Jacksonville have something similar with an absolute gem of a resource in the St. Johns River?
We'll
always
find
been
out.
My belief.
We'll find out why, if it can, in fact, and hopefully it does get to that point. But, you know, again, great support from some of those folks over there, have just as much knowledge. I did find it interesting at the Union Jacks party, a lot of members of the Bold City Brigade from obviously Jacksonville, from St. Augustine were represented. The UK and Ireland branch over there, they've got about 50 members, I was told. During one of the many moments when the Duval chant went up mm-hmm. in the room, you know, just sparked by nothing much other than one person doing it, and then the whole room would follow suit. I happened at one point to turn to the lady next to me who was from Scotland, and I asked her, do you have any idea what Duval references? No idea. No clue.
Yeah, no idea.
And she is just belting it out at the top of her lungs with the rest of them. I think a lot of them do get the fact, and I explained to her, you know, it's like if you're from Suffolk, you're still from England, right? Or you can maybe consider yourself a Londoner or whatever, but it's a different region within the area. And she seemed to get it, by the way. Scottish, for me, my ear is not attuned. I used to have a neighbor on my street
as far as
growing
understanding
up,
her.
To understand it, the Scottish accent. I did more leaning in with the Scots than I did with any other group while I was over
there.
Well,
you know what would help you out with that? If you drink a little scotch, you can understand the Scotch accent a little bit.
I was smart enough. I told you I was smart enough a couple of times when the brown water was passed my way on Saturday night. Like, I started out. Because the boys, Tony, they're telling me all week, oh, you can't handle the English beer, right? So I'm not going to go over there and drink Coors Light, right?
Sure.
I'm going to drink some English beer. You know, that's not a knock on Jeff who went Budweiser at the party on Friday night. That was what
was
made
available
to
him,
okay? I would have, had that been the only option, pass me a Bud, all right? But, so I'm trying to drink the English beers, and I go in there and, they had, like, Carling's is pretty good, you know, just an average beer, whatever. And so I was drinking that this week, and they didn't have that on Saturday night. And, they had Strongbow, so I tried that as a little sweet. You know what? I've had enough English beer. I'm going Australian. I drank Foster's the rest of the night, and I stuck with that.
I think one night I had, London Pale Ale, which is very good.
Yeah. Oh, I had that too.
Which is, probably more kind of along the lines that we're accustomed to here. You know, your Bud Lights, your Miller Lights, et cetera. And then one night I had Peroni, which was
I had that too.
Excellent. Yeah. That's an Italian
beer. That's an
beer.
Italian beer. Yeah. They had that at the hotel.
Very good.
Because when we got back one night, Frangie threw down the credit card for a little after hours. Yeah.
Interesting that your beer taste would go the same direction as your accent.
Oh, yeah. I went straight. G'day, mate. That didn't play too well in London. They didn't know what I was trying to do.
That's
there.
One thing that you definitely can get a wide variety over there is beer.
Wide variety of beer and accents, both.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like half deaf anyway, so it's hard for me to understand people, you know, in a conversation. And then you add the accent to that, being half deaf. And I literally was putting my ear right next to people that were from somewhere else.
I was doing that too. And after like the third time, I would just nod and give them the thumbs up. Or, yes, I'm right there with
Duval.
Whatever. You, I'm a say, right? Just throw your D's up. I have no idea what you said, but I'm sure it was, meant positively towards the Jacksonville Jaguars, and that's good enough for me. 641
too is
10-10. Go ahead.
There's a ton of different accents all around London.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Regional little areas.
I think it's just like if you're from, you know, I'll draw the comparisons to New York, you know, Queens or Brooklyn or Staten Island.
Absolutely. Long
Island.
New
Jersey.
Yeah.
You know, you have different. And there's one particular accent. I remember getting a conversation with one of the hosts from last year, and he was telling me that there's two very distinct accents over there, and one of them, he said, the one you're having a hard time with is this. And I said, well, I need to talk to less people that are from there and more that are people from here.
Well, you think about it, man. You got a Texas accent. You get, you know, just your southern accent. You got your upper Midwest. You got all kinds of accents. It's not an American accent, but they pick us out pretty easily when we go over there.
Yeah, it's pretty easy for them, I'm sure.
That's all right. You know what? I'm proud of being American, man. And I had a great time with the European brothers and sisters for the week, but good to be back home. Ken, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. I'm not sure if I'm going to have scotch or beer with lunch today. I'm not quite sure.
You know, and have a dandy sandwich with it and wash it all down. There you
go.
I got
the bologna and cheese. You know, guys, I know there's a lot more going on offensively, internally with this team than I'll ever even fathom or know. But it's just so frustrating, and I know that, you know, we've got a turnstile of receivers with hamstrings and ankles, and Bortles a rookie, and we've got to, you know, try to protect his, you know, his sanity and not turn him into Blake or into Gabbert. It just seems like the teams, after the first 10, 15 plays, or even coming into the game, know that our pass plays aren't going further than 10 yards. And I know we did have a few, you know, longer plays, but I'm almost at the point that if it were me, I'd be like, all right, what do we have to lose at this point in time besides another game? Are we unable or unwilling to open up the game plan and try to take the top off? Or do we just not have a receiver able to do that? And I appreciate y'all taking my call, and I'll take it off the air.
We're just talking about this, Jeff, right?
Yeah.
On the break. Moments ago.
It's a great observation by Ken. In fact, I'm going to show two plays on film room Friday, Jaguars.com. What is the best ball that Blake Bortles throws? And Tony, Mike, your opinion.
The best ball that he throws. I don't know. I really haven't thought of it in those terms.
Tony, you got an idea?
I mean, I like him on that 8 to 10 yard out.
Okay, see, the best ball he has thrown yet, all preseason, regular season, is where he can, what I call, drop it in a bucket.
Okay, yeah, okay? I can see that.
That kind of a throw. But yet we're still seeing a lot of, you know, the slants, the outs and such, and we've seen, you know, the ball bounce on slants.
Sure.
And also on outs. And I think that part of the process with a young quarterback is not only a young quarterback having to make all the throws and his understanding of the game, but also the coach's understanding of what he does best. The throw to Marquise Lee, where Marquise got his feet tap-tap right out of the bounds, dropped in the bucket.
Yep.
The deeper ball to Allen Robinson, where he beat the press coverage, and it was later in the game, and Blake Bortles drops it in a bucket. You know, so I think that part of this process, and I think it's, you know, it takes time to understand it. It takes time to get to that point where you can do it because of all the constant change, is getting him to the point where you can make him or have him make those kind of throws. But part of that also, and Tony made a great observation because he's watching the All-22 right now, is when they try to protect Blake Bortles so that he has the time to make those kind of throws, it's an issue. You know, drop back protection right now is the weakest part of the offensive line play. You know, and it's not just one guy. You know, one time it might be a Bowenko, the next time Zane Beatles, the next time Luke Jokel. Another time it might be Austin Pasdor, or it might be Brandon Leonard, although it's very rarely Brandon Leonard as well as he's been playing. So when they can get to the point where they can protect him, I think that we'll see more of that evolution, or I should say progress towards that type of passing.
Tony made one example, or cited one example of a play where had there been time for Blake Bortles to scan the whole field, Cecil Shorts was breaking open deep on a play that would have been a potentially big play for the Jags. But what you're talking about, the protection's not there. So it's not necessarily that these guys aren't getting separation, but you can't hold the defense off right now long enough to give them the chance that they need to get it. So seems like more of a blocking issue than it is a route running or speed or quickness.
It's a little bit of everything, but I think the protection issue is
the primary.
Is primary right now.
By the way, I should mention, as an aside here, today is the deadline for the Jags to activate Aaron Colvin. And all indications are that will happen before 4 o'clock. So there'll be a corresponding roster move waiving somebody to make room for him on the 53. So
he surprised me.
You know, in terms of the pace in which he's returned?
You're talking about a guy coming back from an ACL reconstruction who had surgery, you know, early January,
right,
somewhere in there. And while we were at the Grove, we had the opportunity to watch practice, and I actually stayed out there and watched practice throughout on, I believe it was Wednesday, Thursday, and most of a little bit of Friday. And to watch him move and practice, clearly he looks like he's ready to go.
Right.
And here's the thing. You have to make a decision by 4 o'clock today to whether he is on the roster or not. Okay. If he's not on the roster, he cannot practice anymore.
Right. He's on injured reserve, done for the year.
Done for the year. All the thing he can do is go to meetings and work out with the strength and conditioning staffs and the trainers and such. Are you a good enough team to, are you, where you're worried about keeping a roster spot to where a guy that can play? Or are you like at the point, which they are, where you're saying, okay, we're a developing team. We need to develop this guy so that next year it's not year one for him still.
I wanted to bring this point up to you that coincides with what you're talking about here, but in regards to Blake Bortles, because, and I wrote this down earlier, we were heading into a break and you were talking about how, you know, bringing up the topic of how the Jags wanted to sit him. And everyone said, well, that was never going to happen. But you could see why, as you said, early on, played instinctively, came in, almost didn't know how difficult this was supposed to be. And he was just winging it around and playing great. And now all this stuff is piling in. We've seen the high interception rate, all these things, right? But ultimately, in your opinion, having played through this and continuing to play through this over the next six games, how much more advantageous will it be than if he was able to sit back and just absorb things through practice and having him get ready in the fashion that they at least laid out the plan for initially?
I mean, I believe that game repetitions are equal to about four practice reps. And then you talk about not only the amount of experience that he's gaining in game, but the amount of experience that he's experiencing Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Because if he's not the guy,
he's not getting that.
All he is imitating, you know, somebody else. And what benefit does he get? He gets some of it, but not the benefit that he's getting from playing right now. So what you've actually done by putting him in the lineup is now accelerated the curve, his learning curve, and shortened that time frame by at least a year, year and a half, by him playing now.
There you go. Jeff Logman, 641-1010. Let's go to DJ next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, DJ.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great coverage last week, man. I really enjoyed it and everything. For the life of me, man, I just don't understand Toby Gerhardt. And the TV does a great job of breaking down the play, showing it a replay. The 4-for-1, the offensive line blocked it great. But, Jeff, as you know, any former football players know, that was a straight Oklahoma drill. The linebacker was a rookie linebacker, Kitchens. He met it in the hole. It was one. It was there for the taking. And he didn't win the Oklahoma drill. My thing is with Gerhardt is that, forget the speed and all that. Those 4th-and-1s, Oklahoma drills, one-on-one, when the line got it and you're met in the hole, he has to win those battles as a veteran. And I feel like he's not winning it. And if you got young running backs too, and they don't have nobody to look up to in that instance. So my thing is, what's going on with Toby and his, you know, trying to get the job done because he's not getting it done?
Well, you bring up an interesting point that, you know, Toby Gerhardt did not win that one-on-one battle with Anthony Hitchens. And if you're a coach or a fan, you expect Toby Gerhardt to win that battle against a rookie. I mean, you're talking about a 230-pound back against a 230-pound linebacker. Show a little wiggle. Do whatever it takes to win that battle. But, you know, previous to the Cowboys game, Toby Gerhardt has been very good on third and short situations. He was, I think, 80%. At converting those third and shorts, and in the game, I think he went 1-for-2. He made one, and then he didn't make the 4th-and-1. But you would like to see him win that battle. But, you know, also, I'm not a big proponent of bunching it up on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1 sometimes. I think Denard Robinson has shown now, especially the play that he scored late in that game at the touchdown, where he ran through J.J. Wilcox, the safety, you know, to maybe rethink even some of that. Okay, well, look, if we're going to be in a 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1, Blake Bortles running quarterback, right? Why not keep the threat and make the defense honest that you've got a quarterback that can run and keep it, but then you also have a running back that's starting to show tremendous progress in Denard Robinson and power, which we didn't know that he had prior to this year. So maybe that they look at that differently. Here's the other thing. Let me just add this about the running back position. When they go to their third down package, there's a lot of Jordan Todman and a lot of Toby Gerhardt. Why not Denard Robinson?
Right.
He's catching the ball very well. He's dynamic in the open field. I think he's proven that he's good in protection, very good in protection. I think that more of that role also needs to pass on to Denard.
It almost feels like they're saying, well, what role do we have for these other guys? Let's find a way to use these guys when Denard doesn't seem like the workload is too much for him right now.
Right. Well, right? I'm sure just like everything, you know, a young team, you're trying to control the amount that's on their plate to allow their development to kind of progress. And I think that now that you self-evaluate in the bye week, I think we're going to see some changes in some of that.
We'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight when we return. Happy Veterans Day to all of you out there who have served or are serving honorably in the United States Armed Forces. We appreciate you guys from Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
1010XL, 92.5 FM.
This is Jack O'Brien of 1010XL, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all veterans, including all of my brothers and my sons, for giving years of their life to protecting America.
God bless the USA.
Philadelphia Freedom. By Elton John. Did you know there was a team in the World Tennis League that Elton John co-owned called the Philadelphia Freedom?
I didn't know that there was a World
Tennis
League.
I bet you didn't know that back in the day. It was like, I want to say like in the 70s, whatever. Like Billie Jean King played in it. They, I don't know. They had like teams, you know, different professionals.
How do you have a league?
They had different teams, and I guess you probably play like doubles, mixed doubles, whatever. Something like Davis Cup. You ever see, you know, how they play Davis Cup?
Yeah.
I'm sure it was something like that. That's all I know is that the song that there was a team in the World Tennis League, something like that.
I know for like college bowling, and I know this because I watched Vanderbilt win a national championship in it one year. But the way they do it is you have a 5-person team, and each player gets 2 frames. So everybody plays two frames.
Really?
In your 10-frame. Yeah, you don't bowl a game. It's you get two.
I would have thought it'd be like golf.
No, and you put them in the order that you want them to, so you have probably your best leading and finishing. But yeah, everybody plays.
Interesting. At least mildly. All right, 641-1010 is the number. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asked you, in honor of Veterans Day, which veteran Jaguar player has served with the most distinction this year and which one still has a lot of work to do. Tony, what kind of responses did we receive?
Here's what we got from Hadaru. We got Roy Miller and Tyson Alualu have played much better this year. Scobie really needs to step it up. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Eric, Puz was the best before he was hurt. Neither Scobes or Beatles needs to pick up their game. From Dusty, hands down, it has been Marks, the vets that need to step up. Clem and Beatles. From Brian, number nine foe, that would be Senderic, Marks, and Big Red, the best, least, Watson, Beatles, Toby, Chad, and Scobie. Hashtag do your job. That's a laundry list, considering there's, what, 16, 17 guys on the whole roster that qualify as answers for this. And from Sarah, worst is our punter. Can we have a new one, please? Hashtag Jaguars today.
Oof. I would agree. Senderic Marks probably top of the list.
Me too.
You know.
Yeah, he's been good. But you know what? When you've got one win, there's a lot of veterans that need to pick it up.
Not sure.
And a lot of young players that need to pick it up. That's the reality.
Yeah, it is the reality, and that's where they stand. You know, the reality is 1-9. Jeff, you look at last year coming out of the London experience, nothing indicated, based on the way they played in London, that they were about to turn it around.
No, not.
Right, so 0-8, haven't been beaten by double figures in every single game, had their worst loss against San Francisco, go into the bye week, come out of it, and bounce back winning four out of the next five games. What kind of chance do you give them to get on, maybe not, you know, four out of five, but to start putting some W's together with the bye week behind them in a couple weeks?
I think you got a chance because, with the exception of the Indianapolis Colts, Baltimore Ravens, I mean, the schedule's not particularly strong. You got Houston twice. You got Indy once.
Tennessee again.
I mean, you know,
they're Giants.
They're not great football teams. Giants are sitting there, I think, at 3-6 with a lot of questions about their offense and their defense. You know, so I think you can turn it around. The one difference, though, between last year and this year is, I mean, prior to the bye last year, you were like, how are they going to win a game?
Right.
You know, whereas you've had moments where they've been competitive, and they've been competitive with a younger team than they had last year. So, I mean, you feel good about that. But at the same token, you also say, okay, look, we need to start seeing competitive games, you know, week in and week out to where it's consistent. And will that happen? I hope so, because I think David Caldwell has done a pretty good job of assembling young talent. And I think that young talent needs to start to show, you know, because – with a young football team, and I remember going all the way back to my rookie year, when you got after Halloween and into that middle of November, you're almost in the mindset of, wow, this is a long year, because you've already played, what, you know, 14 games. Because, I mean, you got to count the preseason as well, because a lot of these young guys played a lot
right
in the preseason. And so you hit that wall typically as a rookie player when you get into that week 8, 9. And then all of a sudden you fight through it, and then you start to realize, okay, I can do this. You know, so I think what we've seen with this team over the last couple of weeks is that it's a little bit of that young player rookie wall, and hopefully they can come through it in better fashion, because for the most part, they're fairly healthy. I mean, this team is pretty healthy. And that's the biggest thing, I think, with any team getting ready to try to put together a string of games of good performances in the last 6 weeks, is how healthy are you?
Fan Feedback Spotlight, by the way, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, featuring Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, Tom Bush Mini, and Tom Bush Volkswagen. We encourage you to check out TomBush.com the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle. You can also follow them on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors. And Brian Bush is always involved. He's always tweeting his thoughts on the Fan Feedback Spotlight question of the day. So we appreciate you sending yours as well.
And this is a team, you talk about the health of the team. Mercedes Lewis looks like he's going to be back when they go make that trip up in Indianapolis. We talked about Aaron Colvin, a guy that we haven't seen on the field yet for this team. What his role will be when he is active for this team, potentially, we don't know.
Maybe nickel.
Right.
Maybe starting nickel.
Right, but there certainly
some
is some interest in that. And look, it's difficult. I go back, Jeff, and because of the way it's looked really for the last 3-4 weeks, it's been difficult to come on and talk to the fans about improvement from this team. They keep shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, it's been turnovers. That's a killer.
Number one.
And it's tough to talk about improvement from a team if they're going to continue to give the ball to the opponent. But you go back and watch where they were at this point in 2013. Look, they're better. And I'm not sure that they're going to win 4 games or more this year. I'm not sure they're going to be better in the win-loss column than they were last year. But I feel better about where this team is than I did at this point last year in 2013.
I feel a lot better just from a talent standpoint. And now you need to start to kind of supplement that young talent with some experienced talent.
Yep.
And I think that that will happen in free agency. But you've got to see the light come on for some guys here. You want to start to see what we saw in the first couple of weeks of Blake Bortles playing. You want to start to see glimpses of that.
Over again. The last six, right?
Absolutely. You want to start seeing glimpses of Marquise Lee becoming involved. You want to start seeing glimpses of Jonathan Cyprian getting better in coverage and making impactful plays with the defense. I don't know if you can say that he might have had his worst game against the Dallas Cowboys. Chris Clemens, you want to see him start to show some things. Ryan Davis, I think, is still playing exceptionally well. I think he's been a very, very nice player for this football team. You want to see Andre Branch get healthy. You want to see Luke Jokel get better. That's key for this football team in the next six weeks. He had some technique errors against the Dallas Cowboys. Gave up a sack to Jeremy Mincy on a move that had no right. He had no right letting Jeremy Mincy beat him on that move. His technique was poor. So you want to start to see progress in those areas. And most importantly, Tony, like you said, 22 giveaways is number one in the National Football League. I don't care how good you are or how much better you've gotten. You don't see any of that when you turn the ball over at the rate that the Jaguars have been doing in minus 11 in turnover differential. You're not going to win any games at minus 11.
Right. It's not like they're forcing a high number either and setting themselves up.
Well, you know what? 11 takeaways, if you look at it as far as across the league, it's probably middle of the road.
Middle of the road. That's what I'm saying.
Which is not terrible.
But when you're last in the league in giveaways, it's nowhere close to
first
covering
in the
up.
I look at it as first in the league.
However you want to look at it.
The higher the number,
you're
really good
at
it.
Let's get David in under the wire here quickly. David, go ahead, man.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So a team that's 1-9 right now going into the bye week, and a team that last year barely put together 5 wins or 4 wins. Everybody talks about how this is supposed to be a 2015 rebuild. That's unheard of. Find me another franchise aside from maybe when Andy Reid went into KC that goes 2-14 and makes the playoffs the following year. I mean, I like the way Jacksonville's building the franchise, being that it's a bunch of young players. I mean, having 6 rookies on the offense is unprecedented, but it gives you hope in the long term. But people have got to understand that they're not going to be they'll be lucky if they're 500 next season. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Well, you draw the comparison of Andy Reid at Kansas City. You could also possibly draw a comparison this year with the Cleveland Browns and Mike Pettine. You're talking about two totally different rosters. Kansas City had what was like 9 Pro Bowlers on that team that Andy Reid took over. So it's not like Andy Reid took the same route that Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley are taking. That's much different. That's not an apples to apples comparison. In fact, if you tried to compare this rebuild job with any that's happened in the National Football League, going all the way back to 1995 with the expansion Carolina Panthers or this football team in the Jacksonville Jaguars, none of them were that young on this side, on one side of the ball like they are. And if, for that matter, on the defensive side of the ball as well.